We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
Domestic abuse has long been thought to affect some 3 million women in the U.S. each year. But a new study from the National Research Center for Women and Families indicates that rates of domestic abuse have now dropped to zero.
We appreciate everyone's concern, but domestic abuse just isn't the problem we once thought it was.
According to the report, cases previously mistaken for domestic abuse had other perfectly understandable explanations, such as rickety staircases, slippery showers, and poorly placed doorknobs. The research team presented their findings at the National Research Center's semi-annual conference yesterday. The researchers are so confident in their findings that they have denied a grant from the Oregon Department of Social Services to do a follow-up report.
I don't think it's any use going over the same data over and over again. There's no domestic violence. I think everyone should just mind their own business.
Contrary to our preconceptions, most women are very happy. Now, if only we weren't so clumsy.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
Are in the milling mob trying to prevent trucks from delivering needed food to the city. Outnumbering the police 10-1, they attack in gangs. The actual beginning of hand-to-hand fighting, in which one deputy was beaten to death and scores were injured.
In this time of the nation's difficulties, we appeal to the common sense of the people for support of the orderly processes of the National Recovery Act as against industrial warfare.
It's a terrible thing to see, the kind of trouble that makes neighbors bitter enemies. Surely there must be some other and better way of settling these disputes.
The most disgraceful scenes of disorder New York has witnessed in many years. The rioters, feeling they had nothing to fear from the police, attacked cab drivers, smashed cabs, and dragged passengers from them. Here they are hitting one of the drivers without being arrested, destroying private property on the streets of the world's largest city while the police stood by.
When morning broke, combat still continued against 500 men of the National Guard who were vainly attempting to quell the riot. Police and guardsmen found it necessary to use tear and nausea gas bombs, the fumes choking and blinding friend and foe alike, and even penetrating into the adjoining houses. Casualties were numerous. The authorities were eventually compelled to use firearms. Three deaths are already reported. The Moshesuk Cemetery and the Central Falls saw some of the fiercest fighting. Both strikers and police took advantage of the gravestones as a protection from the missiles. And neither side could claim an advantage, and it's feared that greater loss of life will ensue.
And I have said to our people, hit back! And I'm saying to you in Rhode Island, if you're hit, there is but one nose! Hit back! Hit as hard as you can! the American people will never tolerate a dictatorship in the name of any cause or any class. In Europe, they led to the dictatorships of Mussolini and Hitler, under which the laboring people had no rights. In Red Russia, strikes are outlawed under the penalty of death.
The California National Guard has been ordered into active service by our governor for the purpose of maintaining law and order in San Francisco and protecting life and property. This we propose to do at any cost.
Those charged with the enforcement of law and the protection of property also may blunder, but the merits of no case can justify violence. Scenes like these have more than local significance. They represent a menace to our entire recovery program. Riots are but one degree removed from civil war and must be regarded as such. Surely the last resort in settling differences between fellow Americans.
Samurai. I was born in London, but I grew up in Iraq, and I came back to London in 2005 after the Iraq war, after the USA destroyed the country. I've got two messages, one from Saddam Hussein, ex-president, and one from the Iraqi people. This is the first message.
Come on. You fucked up the country. You fucked up the country. You destroyed the country. Fuck you. Fuck your democracy.
Get out of here, dude. Get out of here.
Political debates can sometimes get heated, but most not this heated. Two MPs coming to blows on a live TV debate in Georgia, suitably called argument. Minutes earlier, the two politicians had been trading insults, with the anchor trying to keep the peace. But it was this last insult that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Sergio Ratiani is from the Georgian United National Movement and Kober Davitashvili from the Dream Party. The irony is that the parties are currently cohabiting in government, although from the looks of this, things aren't looking rosy. It's not known whether the two politicians have since made up.
We've heard of heated debates, but things really boiled over on a Lebanese TV show. These guests were discussing the current crisis in Syria, with one defending President al-Assad, while the other strongly opposed the Syrian leader's regime. The pair traded insults before things turned more physical. The show was then taken off air, and both guests have now apologised.
McCannis sitting in for Clifford Baines, who is regaling the interns with tales of his days at sea. Reality shows like Flavor of Love and Rock of Love are more popular than ever. But a new study by the American Media Institute suggests that these shows may be setting unrealistic levels of skankiness for our nation's skanks.
Yes, every night skanks across America are watching reality TV skanks hanging off of stripper poles and vomiting into hot tubs.
Oh, look, the average skank can't keep up with that.
And statistics show that only 2% of skanks will ever even ride in a stretch Hummer limo, let alone pass out in one.
These shows are not negative. They are empowering.
Absolutely. Come on.
They are.
Yes.
They teach young skanks that if they really try, someday they could take a crap on the floor of a beautiful mansion.
Morley, these shows are basically teaching a skank to believe, I have to drink Jägermeister shots out of another skank's infected double-pierced belly button, or I'm not good enough.
And well, if these shows make skanks feel bad, then skanks can change the channel.
Now, Leslie, you've written about your own experiences as a skank, isn't that right?
Yes.
Oh, you used to be a skank.
Yes. When I would turn on the TV and see a skank on a dirt bike in a tube top, miniskirt, no underwear, trying to win an exclusive date with a C-list celebrity who wouldn't even remember her name, it hurt because I knew that I could never reach that level of skankiness
myself.
Some say one of the more damaging aspects of these shows is that they teach skanks to talk shit about other skanks, to call each other fake, to steal each other's leather boots.
Spit in each other's faces like Punkin did when New York called her a motherfucker.
Yeah, skanks need to learn to support each other.
Because the baby daddies ain't going to stick around after the baby's been born.
Well, then it follows that the FCC should cut off all shows that pit skank against skank. All contests gone.
Leslie had a bad experience. Yeah.
What?
Come on.
What? You don't know me. Don't act like you do.
Step off, Leslie.
What?
Step off,
What did you call me?
Hold on. She called you a hoe.
What are you going to do about it?
She is calling you out. You hoe.
You a hoe?
Yeah.
Yo, man. Yo, I know you see me here, dude. I've been waiting here like 10 minutes, man. No. This is my parking space, man. Now, what you need to do is put your little hybrid in reverse and go out the way you came in. What? Yo, it's about to get real in the Whole Foods parking lot, man.
It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. I got my steel and you know it gets sparked a lot. I'm on my grind, homie. It's on my mind, homie. These fools with clipboards are looking at me like they know me. It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. You know the deal with the little shopping carts they got. Check out what I say. It happens every day. It's how we live on the west side of L.A.
Over the past 3 months, the Organic Spies recorded hidden camera footage of 30 employees at 12 Whole Foods stores in Los Angeles, California. to investigate intentional false marketing by Whole Foods. They train employees to tell customers they do not sell genetically engineered foods, even though 20 to 30% of their products contain GMOs.
I think that's our policy to carry anything that's grown with
GMOs. If these have GMOs, I just want to avoid them.
Yeah.
So.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
If they did, we wouldn't be carrying them.
Okay.
In 2009, Whole Foods became the first nationally certified organic grocer when they were certified organic by CCOF. This led to deceptive marketing that causes many people to believe everything at Whole Foods is organic and chemical-free. Whole Foods heavily advertises this and uses other masterful greenwashing tactics to brand themselves as a local organic retailer so people believe everything in their store is healthy.
I'm riding slow in my Prius, all leather, tinted windows. You can't see us. Everybody's trying to park. You can feel the tension. I'm in electric mode. Can't even hear the engine. Just then I saw a spot open up. My time is perfect. I'm creeping up. But then this other dude tried to steal it, going the wrong way. Yo, man, I've had a long day. It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. Yeah, I got my steal and you know it gets sparks a ride. I'm on my grind, homie. It's on my mind, homie. Yeah. These fools with clipboards are looking at me like they know.
They don't know.
It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot.
Real.
You know the deal with the little shopping carts they got.
Small.
Check out what I say. It happens every day. It's how we live on the west side of L.A.
All right. In the meantime, there's an ad that's stirring up some controversy involving Whole Foods. President Obama's headshot used to promote whole organic chicken. What's the explanation here? What's this all about?
Yeah, Fred, this had a lot of people's scratching their heads. President Obama selling chicken. This was only one Whole Foods store, let's make that clear, on the Upper West Side of New York City. They were basically, they put it out on Monday, on President's Day, to promote this sale of chicken, $1.99 a pound. The sale is actually going on today. But a lot of residents and some shoppers were essentially offended by this, saying, you know what, it promotes a stereotype of African Americans and chicken. I did some digging today, obviously called up Whole Foods to talk to them about this. I'm going to read a statement that they gave to me. Quote, as a company who celebrates diversity and one that has a zero tolerance discrimination policy, we want our shoppers to know there was no intentional disrespect meant at all. And once it was brought to our attention that the sign could be perceived as controversial, it was removed immediately. The spokesman tells me, Fred, that a shopper on Wednesday raised some concerns about it, some complaints, they removed it that day, but that was not before a resident, a local resident who had saw the sign, snapped the picture of it. So that's how we got the picture of it.
Okay, yeah, that's a weird item of the day.
Who am I, bitch, nigga? Buy your own damn fries.
Now I'm on the inside, looking at my list. Organic chicken, kale salad, and a lemon twist. Some girl in yoga pants is looking at me funny. I'm just trying to find a decent Pinot Noir for $120. Then I take it to the cheese counter, Humboldt Farm. You just ran out, sir. Really, dawg? Take it easy, man. I try to calm myself. I've been on edge ever since they took kombucha off the shelf. It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot.
Yeah.
I got my steel and you know it gets sparked a lot.
Really,
I'm on my grind, homie. It's on my mind, homie.
Yeah.
These fools with clipboards are looking at me like they know.
Nah, not now,
it's
dog.
Getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. You know the deal with the little shopping carts they got.
That's right.
Check out what I say.
Yeah.
It happens every day. It's how we live on the west side of L.A.
Since its recent merger with Wild Oats, Whole Foods has seen its stock price tank, and the company is facing financial trouble. And the problems for the market giant may not be going away. Whole Foods CEO John Mackey was recently caught blogging under an assumed name for 7 years, with all his posts trashing Wild Oats, an employee that some have said was intended to talk down the sale price.
This buster's on his iPhone talking to his friends, picking up some cayenne pepper for his master cleanse. You're the most annoying dude I've ever seen, brah. Could you please move? You're right in front of the quinoa. Damn, I'm about to check out. Pay my 80 bucks for 6 things and get the heck out. The express lane is moving hella slow. Man, these fools don't know that this shit's getting real. It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. So real. I got my steel and you know it gets sparked a lot. I'm on my grind, homie. It's on my mind, homie.
That's right.
These fools with clipboards are looking at me like
I said not right now.
It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot.
Uh-huh.
You know the deal with the little shopping carts they got.
Yeah.
Check out what I say.
Yeah.
It happens every day.
That's right.
It's how we live on the west side of L.A. It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot.
It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. Parking lot.
Even Whole Foods co-CEO John Mackey admitted to the Wall Street Journal, "We sell a bunch of junk." He should have added, "We sell a bunch of GMO junk." In markets such as Chicago, where there are only a few independent health food stores because Whole Foods drove competitors out of business, the ratio of GMO products is much higher than in LA, where we did our hidden camera sting operation. Whole Foods now has 329 stores. There are 71 stores in California and another 12 in development throughout the state. Whole Foods glorifies their quality standards in their stores and online. We have high standards and our goal is to sell the highest quality products we possibly can. We define quality by evaluating the ingredients, freshness, safety, nutritive value, and appearance of all the products we carry. Whole Foods profits from the false marketing of their GMO products branded as natural. Prop 37 would require products containing GMO ingredients to be barred from using the word natural on their label. A sign at one of their stores states, "We have been advocating for GMO labeling for 2 decades. We always support the right to farm, right to buy non-GMO foods. GMO food crops are abundant in the U.S. and there is no mandatory product labeling. You can avoid GMOs by 1. Going organic, only non-GMO seed is used. 2. Choosing our 365 Everyday Value brand, all made without GMO ingredients. 3. Looking for non-GMO project products as they are third-party verified. We are here to protect your right to know what's in your food and help you make conscious choices."
You have to look at who owns the food industry, and the pharmaceutical industry own the food industry, so the food industry want to make you sick and ill by putting all these chemicals in that rot your body and make you ill, so they then can give you tablets to make you better, which don't, because it's all about Illuminati industries making money.
All about what?
Illuminati families making money in the world.
Well, oh, you perked up there, Rob. Illuminati families making money.
Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, to be honest.
But we gave our power away. We started not growing our own vegetables, started to give our power away to other people, saying, "We'll make this food for you. You don't want to cook your own food? We'll make this for you." And then we didn't start questioning what's in this stuff, and they started putting all kinds of crap in it. I'm a raw foodist myself.
Language for a Sunday morning.
But I don't eat meat because that's pumped full of chemicals and fear. And why would you want to eat cortisol and fear?
And now to the hot topic of drones. The secrecy surrounding the drone war in places like Afghanistan and Pakistan has many calling for more transparency on the drone campaign. Because it's been so secret, it's been impossible to get accurate figures on just how many people have been killed by U.S. drone strikes. But now one lawmaker has put a number out there. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham reportedly estimated 4,700 people have been killed. This number, he says, includes militants and civilians. And here's what he told the local newspaper, quote, "We've killed 4,700. Sometimes you hit innocent people, and I hate that. But we're at war, and we've taken out some very senior members of Al-Qaeda." Now, that number is significantly higher than some of the estimates we've heard before, and it's unclear where he got that figure. Earlier, I was joined by Marcy Wheeler, investigative reporter for MTWheel.net, and I asked her how accurate she thought these numbers were.
That number actually is really close to the number that the Bureau of Investigative Journalism out of London has come up with. So, and they're pretty rigorous, not just in referring to news reports, but in kind of circling back and checking their data after the fact. So it may not be far off. Mm.
So and got me pacing. Satan's nation causing the devastation. Nowhere to run or hide. The disaster diaspora continues to divide. When forces collide, pick a side. Pledge allegiance to your region and ride. Put your leader lie, let you to the season of genocide. The reason why men have died remains uncertain. The pain's still hurting. Burdened with death, no one left, close the curtains. Show's over, so I pray to Jehovah. Even though the concept's way out like a nova, I don't know the outcome, now you know how come.
At the same time, though, is there really any way to know how many people have died, considering how secret the operations have been?
No, of course not. What's interesting about Senator Graham's comment, though, is the administration is getting all kind of squirrely about it, as if it's right. So perhaps he is right. Perhaps that is the number. You know, with drones, usually you get a better read of what the truth is when the administration starts acting all squirrely than anything that they actually tell you, because they're not, they're trying to keep this secret.
This world affect the way we sing. Walking softly through the palm to get to the swing. Imagining a better day instead of dismay. Can truly sway the way we walk around. Feeling like we truly found our own bounds. Receiving love by the ounce and by the pound. Planting new seeds in the ground for here and now. Which gives us no reason to frown. Cause when this world shatters, what matters is love is around. What? Love is around where? Not over here. Nah, none of y'all so-called Americans aware. Do I dare speak my mind? Teach the blind. Lead you to the truth that you seek to find. Like who's behind all the madness, the drama, the bombers. Running game, trying to blame the communist llamas. Worldwide homicide, all them fools tied together. Conspiracy theory, y'all ain't trying to hear.
In the Google Plus video chat, he acknowledged for the first time the classified drone program. Why did he do that?
I'm sorry, can you be more specific?
The former director of national intelligence, retired Admiral Dennis Blair, said, I believe yesterday, that unilateral drone attacks in Pakistan actually did more harm to U.S. national security interests than good. Does the White House have any opinion about these remarks?
We believe our relationship with Pakistan is essential to fighting terrorism and terrorists.
The New York Times reports that Vice President Biden, in these sessions talking about the way forward, has pressed specifically for a strategy that elevates the use of unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, and de-emphasizes U.S. combat forces on the ground. Can you tell us if that's true?
Major, I think you can understand why. I'm not going to get into internal discussions.
If that's true or not.
I'm not going to get into it.
Honored to appear before you today as the president's nominee.
Would you halt, please? We'll ask the police to please remove this woman. Thank you very much. Please remove.
Made numerous sacrifices over the years.
Would you pause, Mr. Brennan? If you would remove that individual, please, as quickly as you can. Thank you.
We can stand up against torture, stand up against drones, do what we can.
I speak for the mothers.
All right. We will stop again.
In Yemen, all right. Pakistan, Somalia, and who else? Who else? Where else?
Please remove that woman.
The CIA and the Obama administration refuse to even tell Congress. They won't even tell Congress what countries we are killing children
please,
in. Please. Senator Feinstein.
If you could please expedite the removal. All right. We're going to halt the hearing. I'm going to ask that the room be cleared and that the Code Pink associates not be permitted to come back in. Done this 5 times now, and 5 times are enough.
I ain't no player hater, but I'll hate a player if you push me. While you stand there using all your heart trying to look the part with your cold still eyes, because you don't realize you just forsake. Now see, I would call you female, but you two friends. While she held queen, I mean your existence is fractionally vast. Like the slits of the whores you use to suit your feeble needs. You know saturated soil and false fertilizer showing your future seeds to be just like you. So forsake. On corner auction blocks, lost flocks of brethren, now invested in by this America with stocks of cocaine. Temporary monetary gain in exchange for eternal pain, while the stain of your false reality remains an ever imprinted actuality on your kids and in your kids, as they too have to suffer with you through the bids. Just kids. Try not to let those lonely echoes bother, knowing that father does not answer when they holler due to his undying infatuation with the dollar. Has been street scholar, now sees his toddlers through glass, and as the years pass, they grow fast and begin to understand. Damn, daddy had to go away from us cause he didn't love us, just that he wasn't no real man.
J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings trilogy, in a letter to his son, is quoted as saying, "My political opinions lean more and more towards anarchy. The most improper job of any man, even saints, is bossing other men. Not one in a million is fit for it, and least of all those who seek the opportunity." Tolkien's books, The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, have been read and enjoyed by millions, both young and old alike, but many fail to catch the political meaning of the books. This video is to explore the message of anarchy that is interwoven in the story, The Lord of the Rings. First, let's take a look at the Shire, the home of the hobbits, the main characters and anti-heroes of the books, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. The Shire, for the most part, is a voluntary society, with the only exceptions being the mayor and the watch. The mayor's main duty is to be the postmaster, while the main duty of the watch is to protect the Shire from the occasional beast that may try to wander in from the outside. There is no outward authority in the Shire. All families of the Shire are authorities to themselves. The only rules that they live by are basically the rules of non-aggression, very similar to the voluntarists' non-aggression principle. There is no formal court system in the Shire. There are no criminal courts in the Shire. There are lawyers, but the lawyers' duties consist mainly of writing wills and other such matters. The Shire is not a utopia, but there is nothing in the Shire that resembles anything remotely close to a state. To contrast the peaceful anarchy of the Shire, Lord of the Rings also has Mordor, the dwelling place of Sauron. Sauron is the main antagonist in the world of Middle-earth. He serves as Tolkien's representation of authoritarianism and creates the Rings of Power to seduce the elves into his service. The Rings of Power grant whoever wears them with unnatural powers. The one ring to rule them all, the ring that Sauron reserved for himself, gave him power over all the other rings. The rings can be viewed as an analogy for the power of the state, the many rings being like small local governments, and the one ring being like an all-powerful authoritarian government. The rings, especially the one ring, are more like the state than just the fact that they grant the wearer of the ring with ungodly power over other men. But that is definitely where all the similarities stem from. The ring, just like the state, gives the possessor unnatural power over other men. This ring, just like the state, was created for one reason and one reason only, to control and dominate others. The power of the ring, much like the power of the state, is constantly sought after by those who would abuse that power. Once the ring is discovered to be in the Shire, Gandalf entrusts Frodo to hold the ring upon his journey. Frodo is chosen because he is simple and good-hearted. Gandalf explains that without those qualities, any other bearer would be quickly corrupted by the power of the ring. Along their journey, the Fellowship of the Ring comes across a creature known as Sméagol, or the Golem. The Golem is a sickly and twisted-looking creature that is obsessed with attaining the One Ring, which he calls his precious. It is explained that Sméagol, the Golem, was once a hobbit who came across the ring and, through the corruption of the ring, was transformed into the hideous creature, the Golem. Through this explanation, it is revealed that while possessing the ring may give you power to be more than what you are, that power also transforms you into something less than what you are. What's more, the power of the ring becomes addictive, much like the power of the state. The analogy of the power of the ring shows us the inherent danger that resides in the power of the state. People believe that the power of the state is necessary and that it is safe as long as good-hearted people possess that power. But just like the power of the ring, when good-hearted people possess the power of the state, it turns them into something else. It turns them into something that they would not be proud of. And the power becomes addictive. And much like the power of the ring, the power of the state is often sought out only by those who would use it to abuse their fellow man, to conquer, to dominate, to control their fellow man. The power of the state, when possessed by a good man, will change that good man and turn him evil. The power of the state, when not possessed by a good man, will constantly be sought after by evil men. Thus, Gandalf does the only thing logical with the power of the ring, which is the only thing logical to do with the power of the state. Gandalf knows the only way that Middle-earth can have peace is to destroy the power of the ring, to destroy the ring itself. Much like the power of the state when it comes to regular Earth, the only way we will have peace on Earth is to destroy the power of the state, to destroy the state. For if men cannot be trusted to govern themselves, how then can they be trusted to govern over other men?
A book recently entitled Four Horsemen, The Survival Manual. Yes, I read a book. I know it's antiquated, but my Twitter machine was broken and I had no choice, so stop judging me. In it, the authors talk about a 1976 essay by Sir John Glubb in which he details the stages of empires and the signs that an empire is collapsing. The book argues that Western civilization is now in the final stage, the age of decadence. Symptom 1. Unsustainable behavior. I don't think we exhibit this at all. I realize that it takes the amount of 3 bottles of water to produce 1 bottle of water and that a McDonald's hamburger costs like $60 to produce and $1 to purchase. But math is for p***s. And in my head, 60 minus 1 equals boring, so go f*** yourself. Look, a cheap printer at Walmart costs like $30 and comes with an ink cartridge, but a new ink cartridge costs $35. So when the cartridge runs out, I throw away the printer, buy a new one, and save $5. Some say that's bad for Mother Earth, but I say, don't you think that Mother Earth would want us to be smart if she were still with us, God rest her soul? Symptom 2. An immensely wealthy elite and massive disparity between the rich and poor. Look, I understand that the top 10% possess 80% of all financial assets, but they are our betters, and they worked hard for that money, and we should admire them. Symptom 3. Instead of angering the masses, the repulsively wealthy are admired. I don't do that. We don't do that. But I would have sucked off Steve Jobs. I'm not gay, but I would have done that. Symptom 4. Cheap credit. I'm sorry, I'm still thinking about Steve. Steve! 5. Exorbitant consumption. So I looked up this word in the dictionary, and it said tuberculosis of the lungs. We don't have that. Symptom 6. People convinced that a dizzying amount of consumption and materialism will make them content. I don't think Western civilization has a problem here, because we think we need this stuff. And if you think you need it, then you can get lots of cool shit. I have a 22-inch flat-screen TV for my 52-inch flat-screen TV. I leave it on to keep the bigger one company when I'm not home. 7. Debasement of currency. Now, as I understand it, that's when ocean currents flood your basement, and I have to admit, we have a bit of an issue with that. 8. Overextended military. Overextended? We have the best warriors in the f***ing world. We have 900 military bases around the globe and more drones in the sky than birds. Overextended my ass. Symptom 9. Debauchery. I mean, you call it debauchery, but I call having sex with a donut and then eating it recycling. And symptom number 10. The economy presents distractions from what's really going on. This is often called bread and circuses and includes gladiatorial spectacles. Oh, no, you didn't. Look, you can tear apart my icing-filled bear claw hand jobs all you want, but I will not stand here while you insult ultimate fighting and football. Watching beastly men beat the living shit out of each other for sport is one of the few pleasures I have left. This past Super Bowl was the most watched in history. So what does that say for your idea that we only like circuses? Besides, I don't only watch sports. I watch Top Chef and Chopped and 16 and Pregnant with Another Idiot and there's one more thing on here. It says during the final years of the Roman, Ottoman, and Spanish empires, they made celebrities out of their chefs. Well, I don't think Jamie Oliver and Wolfgang Puck are gonna like that you're saying that about them. And honestly, what do you want us to do? We have all this money laying around. Why not fix up a little dolphin fin foie gras?
The world is not sure who to admire anymore after Tom Hanks murders 5. Kate Middleton shows off her baby bump, and a middle-aged banana panics upon finding its first brown spot. And now, the final web video you will view before tomorrow's scheduled collapse of Western civilization. In a televised statement to the press today, the NRA announced that it's probably best if we just ignore what they're about to say. Representatives for the pro-gun group told the public they would be better off paying no attention to any part of the statement, which will include remarks on assault rifles, the Constitution, immigrants, and schoolchildren.
We believe that everyone will be happier and better informed if they overlook anything we're about to say and just go on with their lives. In fact, it would probably be better if people stop listening anytime they hear the words NRA.
Area man Adam Nunsing panicked yesterday after noticing he had accidentally liked 381 of his ex-girlfriend's Facebook photos. The 28-year-old said that sometime after logging onto the social networking site earlier in the day, he had inadvertently clicked like on over 14 albums worth of photos, including dozens from her office picnic last fall, her trip to New York in 2010, and a photo of her and her first boyfriend from 2006.
I mean, she probably won't even notice, right? God damn it. That looks like I just shared her last 40 status updates too.
And in local news, a film character moves into a beautiful Brooklyn brownstone after getting her dream publishing job. In other news, the Cardinals host a going-away party at the Pope's favorite Vatican City dive bar. A woman is rushed into cosmetic surgery with 8 glaring flaws. And the burglar hiding in Oscar Pistorius' bathroom figures now is probably his best chance to escape.
A recent scientific study undertaken by the University of Bonn in Germany suggests that the universe could be one giant computer simulation. Moore's law dictates that computing power doubles approximately every 2 years, and eventually we're going to reach the stage where computers can artificially create a virtual reality which is indistinguishable from our own. Which begs the question, how do we know it hasn't already been done? You've probably heard of Plato's allegory of the cave, the limitation of people's perceptions and sensual ability, restricted to make them believe in a reality that is no more than an illusion. Now, this is the cosmic incarnation of that principle. Here's Wired magazine. Cosmic rays offer clue our universe could be a computer simulation. If recent measurements of cosmic ray particles are correct, then we may have the first evidence that the universe as we know it is really a giant computer simulation. And basically, what these scientists discovered is that when cosmic rays fly through the universe, the energy that they lose is, quote, consistent with the kind of boundary that you'd find if there was an underlying lattice governing the limits of a simulator. And in this article, they make an analogy with a chessboard. Cosmic rays behave like chess pieces on a chessboard. You can't move them less than one whole space on this lattice structure which they've measured. So these uniform rules governing the movement and behavior of cosmic rays suggest that they are performing as they would if they were trapped inside a giant simulation. Now, they've only got the computing power at present to test this on a tiny scale, so it's far from conclusive, but the early indications really do suggest that our entire universe could be nothing more than a computer-generated simulation. And the New Scientist interviewed Silas Bean, the chief scientist there at the University of Bonn, involved in this project, and the article concludes that, quote, the answer, statistically speaking, is that we're more likely to be living in a simulation. Here's an MIT Technology Review piece. The measurement that would reveal the universe as a computer simulation. Quote, so if our cosmos is merely a simulation, there ought to be a cutoff in the spectrum of high energy particles. It turns out there is exactly this kind of cutoff in the energy of cosmic ray particles, the limit known as the Grisen-Zaspin-Kuzmin or GZK cutoff. So they've measured it. They've measured the effect on these cosmic rays, which basically suggests that they are trapped inside this giant computer simulation that we know as the universe. So are we all just prisoners trapped inside Plato's cave? Is the world and the universe around us merely a computer-generated simulation created by our future selves? Did humanity almost wipe itself out and have to resort to creating a matrix-like substitute? Are we all walking around in someone else's dream? Unfortunately, we're all going to be long dead before anyone really knows for sure.
Is the next generation of surveillance. For the first time, we actually have permission from the government to show the basic capabilities. It is important for the public to know that some of these capabilities exist.
Engineer Yanis Antoniadis designed the new sensor known as Argus. With 1.8 billion pixels, it's the world's highest resolution camera. Argus fits inside this pod that attaches to the belly of a UAV. But because much of the work is classified, we can't see the sensor itself.
Because we are not allowed to expose some of the pieces that make up the sensors, so you get to look at pretty plastic curtains.
Also known as wide area persistent stare, Argus is the equivalent of having up to 100 predators look at an area the size of a medium-sized city at once. This image was taken 17,500 feet above Quantico, Virginia, and covers 15 square miles.
This whole image is at a very, very fine resolution. So if we wanted to know what is going on in any spot along this image, say near this building at this intersection, we can generate a moving image that shows what's going on in the area.
Simply by touching the screen, Antoniadis has opened up a window showing a detailed area while still maintaining the broader context.
And everything that is a moving object is being automatically tracked. The color boxes represent that the computer has recognized the moving objects. You can see individuals crossing the street. You can see individuals walking in parking lots. There's actually enough resolution to be able to see the people waving their arms or walking around, what kind of clothes they wear. And you could pick the location of where you produce these images anywhere in the entire field of view.
Antoniadis can open up to 65 windows at once and can see objects as small as 6 inches on the ground.
From even 17,500 feet, the white thing that you see flying around is a bird.
Argus streams live to the ground and also stores everything, 1 million terabytes of video a day, which is the equivalent of 5,000 hours of high-definition footage.
So you can go back and say, I would like to see what happened at this particular location 3 days, 2 hours, 4 minutes ago, and it would actually show you exactly what happened as if you were watching it live.
To create the world's highest-definition camera, Antoniadis needed to design a new imaging chip. But DARPA, the project's funder, wanted to move fast and keep costs down. So he borrowed technology that most people have in their pockets.
Inside this cell phone, we find a tiny little camera. So if you were to take off the majority of it, you'd be left with an imaging chip. If you were to take 368 of these and make a big mosaic out of them and start shooting images, now you have Argus.
Unlike the Predator camera that limits field of view, Argus melds together video from each of its 368 chips to create a 1.8 billion pixel video stream. This makes it possible to zoom in and still see tremendous detail. Whether Argus has been deployed in the field is classified.
Well, I'm not at liberty to discuss plans with the government, but if we had our choice, we would like Argus to be over the same area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's not very easily achievable with manned platforms. This is where UAVs come in, and they're absolutely the perfect platform.
Argus may be mounted on an armed UAV like the Predator, a long-range platform like the giant Global Hawk, or a development craft called the Solar Eagle that may someday stay aloft for years at a time.
The U.S. Air Force right now has the ability to archive every single video that comes off of every single UAV. We're moving to an increasingly electronic society where our movements are going to be tracked.
Anarchist group is threatening a major rally in Berlin on Saturday against what it sees as a massive expansion of CCTV cameras in Germany. The movement's opposition against the ever-encroaching Big Brother turned from words to action long ago, with it becoming notorious for trashing street cameras all across the country. RT's Peter Oliver takes a look at whether the group's message makes them different from ordinary vandals.
If you ever get the feeling that someone is watching you whilst walking through the streets of the German capital, there may be more to it than paranoia.
The amount of CCTV surveillance in Germany is on the rise. It's not as bad yet as in other countries, for example the UK, where millions of cameras are installed, but still the number is rising, and that's worrying us.
That increase has seen some Berliners take quite drastic action and fight back against what they see as the invasion of their privacy. The target for their fight? The cameras themselves. The phenomenon has even produced an online game, Cam Over. The rules are simple. Film yourself destroying CCTV cameras, post it online, and points are awarded for the amount of cameras smashed, as well as bonus points for creativity. Although many privacy campaigners are uneasy at this more militant approach.
We're not a particular big fan of violence, even if it's violence against things. So that's a form of protest we do not support, although we support the message.
Cam Over's contest will culminate in a protest ahead of the European Police Congress in Berlin. Law enforcers fear the movement and its methods will only rise in popularity and public damage.
I don't think it's a group that is committing these crimes. I think these are some people from the left-wing political corner. They want others to compete with them to destroy cameras.
And what about allegations that the rise in CCTV coverage was turning Berlin into an Orwellian state?
No, I don't think so. I think we have a strict law that only the personal belongings or the personal, the ground you own can be protected by a camera. You're not allowed to point the camera at a public street. And so I don't think there's Big Brother watching everybody here.
Germany does have some very strict laws when it comes to personal image rights. Even global giants like Google have had to censor the faces of anyone snapped on their Street View service. The advancement of things like smartphones and the amount of pictures taken and uploaded to the web every day is sure to make it even more difficult for those who prefer to keep their anonymity. The authorities deny that Big Brother is watching you in Berlin. However, as the amount of CCTV in the city goes up, it becomes increasingly difficult not to get caught on camera.
Then, as if that wasn't disturbing enough, I know it's 2012, but it sure feels like 1984 in this house today.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
My job is to walk around the subject like a photographer. Perfect angle, perfect light, gotta develop the picture just right, cause so many poets just write, and I still do my homework, so I bop hard to the chalkboard. Like my man HB and Enigma said, don't wanna be no Al Bundy poet, sitting back on the couch, back slouched, tins in my pants, talking about how I used to be the man, used to run around the world when it slams, but now I ain't gotta write tight, cause everybody know who the fuck I am, and only old fans praise me, and young cats like Talama AC maybe, nah, fuck that, you must be crazy, if he was hot back in the days, he got lazy, his shit don't faze me, hell nah, that's why I don't just raise the bar, bring it to his jaw like a racehorse, and if he try to show off, I pull back on the reins like I'm trying to rip his face off. Trying to prove yourself till I'm AC in the house, this ain't the place for it. Been pimping the same three poems for 2 years, I tell you to your face, you's a fake poet. That poetry can't change it, just means that people have to wait to see you live to realize you ain't saying it. You might been writing for a while, but your style's still juvenile, so who is you playing with? You looking at Max Weber, Herb Ritz, the microphone is a camera, every poem is a cover shot, while these I'm just hoping to get discovered off writing covers of what I got. My mother did not struggle for 9 months for me to write poems that you get credit for, making me your credit or pay down your credit or I'll be forced to set it off like strafe. Muse abuse can cause you to lose the tooth. Just sit back, retire, watch me school the youth. My photo shoot to the truth, the proofs and the proof. Take a loop, have a gander at the manner of stamina, Mr. Ridiculous, cause no other poet's camera can picture this. My job is to make your feature seem like an iPod sitting on a tripod, to your moms be like, why God, and your pops bounce through the middle of your set like, look, just tell them I said nice job. Even take pictures of your entire operation like the Vice Squad, to the point that they don't know whether to call me Kojak or Kodak. Portfolio so fat that they don't require mind frames as times change till I'm aims, clicks, shoots, portraits, landscapes, groups. You need an epitaph of my autograph and your photograph. If they familiar with my work and they hear yours, they sure to laugh. You sure to have respect for a mic check whose description is this poet's gift must come straight from God. And if yours did not, then picture this. I mean, please. Who else in spoken word deserve more cheese? Freeze frame, seize game, lights change, stage bleeds till he ends. More versatile than your wide angle lens, your panorama pretends while mine spins ubiquitous. Sometimes I feel like I'll be taking pictures with a satellite while these other poets are standing around hoping that their camera phones might picture this.
Now, go find the others. .com.
You know, I don't want to sound like a queer or nothing, but I'm really going to miss you guys when the show's over.